by for Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors with your host, Drew Kirby.
Hey, this is Luke Holmes.
I am Morgan Wallen.
I'm Riley Green.
I'm Travis Denning.
Hey, I'm Aaron Lewis.
Hey, it's Luke Bryan.
I'm Tim McGraw.
What's up? This is Ian Munsick.
Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
Welcome in, and of course, we always love that you're listening, and you can always listen on demand 24/7 in the radio station's app. 5 years, 4.5 years worth of shows, Janet. That means we are on episode 20 some odd in season 5. That's crazy.
That is really crazy, and it seems to me like every time I talk to you, it just jumps another year. I thought we were just at like year 3 not too long ago. So, you know, and it's one of those things that we often talk about, Drew, is that continually providing information to the public. It seems like a lot of times we're repeating ourselves. And so I'm working hard to come up with some new fantastic information for listeners to listen and learn about all the different things that the Wyoming Game and Fish Department does. And so today we have a super fantastic guest, John McCoy, who is a part of our aquatic habitat crew. And that is a group of folks across the state that we have not talked about before, but yet are so critical to Wyoming anglers, and yet they don't even know it.
You know, it's interesting because we were talking a little bit prior to going on about how important the fisheries are to Wyoming and just attracting people from all over the world to come here and toss a line in the water and, you know, catch that coveted rainbow trout or, you know, the brownie or, you know, any of those.
Absolutely. And, you know, Drew, we were talking about, you know, the river through town, the river at Gray Reef, all of the guides that are employed by this natural resource that we happen to have. We were talking about the walleye circuit and the anglers that that brings into the state. And, you know, it really is a diverse fishery that Wyoming has to offer and really an economic boom on so many different levels. And one of the things that Wyoming Game and Fish does and takes very seriously, although, you know, there's always people who doubt that this is really our intention, but it really is to manage your wildlife, your fisheries, right? That's our mission, is to manage your fisheries and wildlife for you, because it is our passion and it is our job. Sometimes people feel like maybe we have a different agenda, but we absolutely do not. And everything, every regulation that we put out there, every job that we do, and every day that we wake up, our goal is really to work on those fisheries and wildlife management for the public.
And that's where John comes into the picture, because John is boots on the ground. He's out there doing the job, and or maybe even waiters sometimes. John, you ever have to slide on waiters?
Oh, yeah, all the time. You know, when it's too cold out and you don't want a wet wade, got to keep warm and dry. So.
Yeah, those are the things that if you start looking at the fish guy's feet and their wader feet, like, yeah, they definitely live for months on end in the water in those waders for sure. So
John, I know that your job is not just really focused on one thing. It's pretty much everything that has to do with the water. Whether it's surveys or going over information, or, you know, maybe there's something in the water that is causing issues. So you probably go through and monitor it all, don't you?
Yeah. That's pretty accurate. I'd say, you know, water's kind of where it starts. Obviously fish, aquatic life, all the things we're talking about today rely on clean water, right? So, that can be a direct influencer of how those species and trout, walleye, all those things, how they're doing. In essence, my job is to take a look at this essential thing, right? And is it behaving in a way that's beneficial for those species, right? And oftentimes you have things that get out of whack, right? You can get too much sediment, you can get water that's too warm, you can get a lack of maybe habitat within that water. But yeah, all these things I'll look at, and to the degree that's possible, we'll try and alter those to a beneficial state for what we're managing.
And one of the great things that John does is he works with all of the other fisheries folks that we talk often about. So like our fisheries biologists who may be out on the river gathering different data than what John is gathering. And they all get together and they sit down and they think, hey, you know, this may need some tweaking. This may need some habitat development. What can we do to make this better? And, you know, the North Platte River is one of those fantastic places that John does a ton of work on to help improve the fisheries and the spawning habitat and all those things for the river. And it's just critical, the work that he does. And it is different than fisheries biologists, but yet so in tune with everything that they do as well.
So when it comes to, you know, you think aquatic, we automatically think about fish, but I mean, there are people that float the river. There are people that, you know, they'll walk along the river and just try to take in the nature as it's there. And really, if it's not taken care of, it's not pleasant to do that. I mean, you go to some places where the rivers aren't taken care of and they stink and they're not pleasant to be around and you're not going to catch fish. But, you know, you guys are hard at it 24/7, 365, really.
Yeah, for sure. No, those non, I guess you'd call them non-consumptive uses, your floaters, kayakers, you know, folks just out, that's a huge part of it too. And, you know, there's wildlife viewing, bird watching, all kinds of things that happen just floating along the river. So, you know, those are for sure things that we consider. You know, the project here in Casper here with the city that we've been a project partner on for years now. Some of the most use comes from these floaters, you know, on a hot summer day, take a look at any of the bridges and you've got tubers, canoers, kayakers all floating underneath while you drive over that bridge. And it's a big part of who we're trying to serve and you know, what we're trying to improve.
What are some of the projects that you have maybe in the future or that you're currently working on that people are going to start noticing maybe a little difference or, you know, improvements?
Yeah, well, one of the ones we've got in planning stages now is, this kind of ties into what we talked about earlier with, we take the information that the fish biologists provide us, and that being, in this case, trout abundance in the river, right? So we've noticed trends since around 2012 of the population declining. And, you know, you get a few years and you're like, okay, you know, it might bounce back, but as those years start to stack up, we start to say, okay, well, what could be at play here? So myself as a habitat biologist, my brain automatically goes to, okay, so where's the deficiencies in the river? What are things we can look to improve? And something that is quite common in tailwater fisheries, like we have below a gray reef here in the North Platte River, you have a degradation of spawning habitats. And that's because your river's cut off from new spawning gravels moving into the system. And there's a whole host of problems that kind of stem from that. But at the 10,000 foot level, trout needs cold, clean water, which it has below the tailwater, but they also need nice sized spawning gravels that are clean and free of sediment. And we've noticed that there's been a decline in that. So some of the projects we're looking at here in the future are going to revolve around increasing those spawning gravels, increasing that habitat so that we can get more consistent reproduction from the trout in the river so that they can naturally sustain themselves, right?
So one of the things that people automatically think of when you say sediment are the flushing flows that happen every March. So is that one step in the project of, you know, making this happen?
It definitely is. And that's kind of been some of the earliest habitat work that us here in the Casper region have undertaken in the river. We got with the BOR and we started working out a flushing flow, and they were super gracious and providing, you know, those high flows for that. I think it's a 10-day period now. That cleans off those gravels and really sets those fish up in a good place to have those clean areas free of fine sediments to spawn. So yeah, those are some of the first things that have been done in our region, and it's made an astronomical improvement on that.
But there's still room for growth.
Oh, absolutely. And Drew, those flushing flows, as you know, kind of started in the late 90s, and so it's been kind of a a neat thing to watch. And the things about that is none of this work that John does happens overnight. And that's kind of tricky, right? We all want to see the results the next day. He goes in, he does his work, and we're like, well, did it work? Well, here we are. I'm not good at math. Sorry, Mom. 1995 until now, how many years has that been that we have been doing flushing flows? And we're now seeing, okay, here's some additional work that we can do to increase the usefulness of flushing flows on the habitat.
That's 30.
Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, other things to keep in consideration, rivers, is people know they're dynamic systems and ever changing. So where there wasn't a problem, maybe 20 years ago, maybe a new ones pop up and new things start to happen. So really that's the task we have at hand, is to just keep our eyes open, be observant, listen to anglers and those krill surveys, listen to the fish biologists and what they have with their numbers, and try and take all these pieces of the puzzle and put them together and start play a little detective here and see what needs fixed. Because a lot of times the issues are environmental, a physical habitat issue, and we can go in and those are things we can alter sometimes and make better. So
how do you do an alteration like you were just talking with gravel beds and, you know, the sediment? How do you, you know, that seems to me like quite the undertaking.
Oh, it is. Yeah. These turn into pretty big projects. And a lot of times we've got to outsource some of that brain power to engineers and geologists and folks who have just a little bit more specialized knowledge in those individual fields. In my position, I kind of have to be a jack of all trades. I have to know just enough to speak that language, but I also have to know the biology, the fish. So it's hard to get in too much into the weeds. So oftentimes we'll contract an engineering firm or a geologist or someone like that to help us come up with a design of how the river should look to best support those spawning goals and objectives we have.
So I would assume when you get information from like the guides or those, you know, guys that are out fishing the river all the time anyway, like that is useful, helpful information.
It definitely is. You know, of course we can get sometimes in a bit of an echo chamber in our own office here. And that's, you know, we have good information. We actually go out and physically count the fish, right? But I never want to discount what the anglers are seeing on the ground, because ultimately they're our customers, right? We're providing a product for the public. And yeah, my favorite thing to do is when I hear somebody's a fishing guide, I'll just corner them in a room and start, you know, pulling all the, hey, what have you seen change in the last 20 years? What are the deficiencies you see? How could it be better? And I love talking to folks about that and just seeing what they think, because that's good information. You know, it may not be on the technical end, but it's the functional end. And at the end of the day, it's what we're trying to improve things for, right? The angler. So
you might want to post a picture of what John looks like, Drew, so people can start to run when they see him coming in a room.
I was going to ask if at any point people are like, oh no, it's John.
Oh God, it's him again. No, it is absolutely 100% correct. And some of the stuff that we do that, John does garner a lot of information on our creel surveys. And we've talked a lot about creel surveys on this show before. And right now we have a huge one going on at Glendo. So every day that you're out there fishing, we have a crew down there that's going to be asking you questions about how was your fishing experience. And while that some of the questions that we ask may seem mundane to people, it all goes back to the science and helping us figure out, okay, you know, what is the catch rate? What is everybody's experience? What are they thinking? And so that information is all critically valuable for us to manage the future of the fisheries. And sometimes, you know, fisheries crash over a year and we don't know why. And we can go back to some of those interviews that we did with people and really look at that information. So thanks to everybody who is out there right now giving us that information, those creel surveys, because it is critical to everything that we do.
You know, you had mentioned that you take all this information and then you try to get the project rolling. And I'm sure that it's a lot of manpower needed. And, you know, like you guys have volunteering options and opportunities, don't you?
For sure we do. Yeah. And in most of these projects, there's a period of time comes where we just need some grunt work, right? Maybe we're hauling materials down to site or, you know, doing some of the projects up in the tributaries, you can't get vehicles into some of those spots. So you've got to carry stuff in. So yeah, there's always opportunities for, you know, volunteering and that kind of stuff. Yeah. That's the fun part of the job though. You know, you can get caught up in project planning behind a desk, and at the end of the day, though, when you get out and get your hands dirty, that's what it's all about. So,
yeah, and to do that, you got to have some of those young bucks and young ladies that are, you know, fit and ready to do that. And really the next generation of anglers and the next generation of, you know, people that are guiding or people that are influencing other anglers.
Absolutely. And you know, that's a key thing you mentioned there, Drew, is this volunteer base. And I would encourage folks who are interested in doing anything to reach out. Let, you know, the Game and Fish know that you're interested in doing some aquatic habitat work. We have a fantastic program online. It's called Volunteer Works that you can go into and sign up. All of that, all of your information, you can click that you want to do aquatic habitat work. We have fun projects that go on. It's been a few years since we've done it, but there was a time when, you know, you could mountain bike fish into Otter Pond up on the mountain and stalk them. And so, you know, things like that that go on. It's not every day. And it does take the, you know, the right kind of planning and everything to get that kind of stuff done. But we would really encourage people to get involved. You know, John is really looking for a good volunteer base that want to help him do a lot of this work and it, you know, to hear from the anglers on the river. So let us know.
I think it's exciting that people didn't even know they needed to know about how important it is. And John, it sounds like you have a lot of things going on for the next few years, but I think I'd like to get into the weeds on some of those, and let's do kind of an ongoing series with you that we highlight exactly what you're up to.
Yeah, that'd be terrific. You know, there's, like you said, there is a lot of work going on, so I'm always happy to talk about it.
You know, I think, Drew, this summer is a great opportunity to help folks learn a little bit more about the importance of aquatic habitat and the role that John plays. He is one single person that is here in the Casper office, but he's a part of a team that deals with things called fish migration or fish passage. That, you know, how do you put a culvert underneath a road that still allows fish to pass through so that the populations are genetically connected? You know, things like that, that are like, what? I didn't even think about that dirt road that I was building on the way to my, you know, pasture to feed my cows. Different things like that are critical. And so it would be great to have you give John and his crew a voice.
Absolutely. Well, let's do that in a couple of weeks. We'll get that series underway. I think people are going to love it. And more information we can share, the better off we are.
Thanks, Drew. And, you know, John has a really neat story of how he came to Game and Fish. He started out as a fisheries technician many years ago. I can remember working some volunteer events with him when he was just a young tyke and was not lucky enough to get a job here with Game and Fish as all the positions were full for quite some time. And then due to retirements, was able to come back several years ago. And we're just tickled that he was able to go work in the private sector, get some amazing work experience and knowledge that he has brought back to us here. And so look forward to diving more into John as his career and John in his projects.
Very good. Well, we'll get this going in a couple of weeks. John, thanks. And it's good to chat with you today.
Yeah, no problem. Good to meet you.
All right, coming up, we're talking the Wyoming Walleye Stampede Governor's Cup for 2025 from Glendoe.
It's Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
Hey guys, it's Drew at Glendoe recapping the Wyoming Walleye Stampede Gov Cup number 2. A little bit later on, we'll be chatting with the winners, Brian and Marcus. We'll give you a rundown of how they did here in just a few minutes. And I'm talking with Brian Woodward from Micromount Discount Sports and the Stampede, and Mitch Bowers, his partner. They put on the tournaments, 3 tournaments and a championship. And guys, the heat turned up for this one. Mitch and Brian, guys, boy, it was another heck of a weekend, and the heat showed up.
The heat did show up, which I saw water temperatures pretty darn close to 70 degrees. And yesterday morning, it started off at like 59. So things really got heated up. And the fish were kind of acting weird, but guys figured it out and came together with a good plan.
Yeah, and consistency really paid off this time, Mitch. You know, the winners had over 20 pounds both days.
Yeah, they didn't move, I think, 20 feet all weekend. They stayed in the same spot all weekend doing the same thing they did. Had a good weight yesterday and today said, we're not moving. We're going to stay here all day.
Yeah, you know, and a philosophy like that sometimes works. Sometimes you get skunked on those ideas.
Yeah, you know, a lot of guys kind of try to outsmart the fish or try to figure out what the fish are doing. And a lot of guys, you know, even on our last tournament, they're looking for main lake points that had a river channel that kind of cut across it. And that's, you know, what they were thinking at that time. And now the fish are kind of starting to transition into some of the weeds. And the winners today were fishing some weed beds that they just felt that those fish were going to move through, and they were hoping at the right time that they would be able to capitalize on those fish moving.
So as you guys were roaming around the lake all weekend, did you see anything that kind of people were trying and really a grab bag of ideas, Mitch?
No, you know, I think usually this bite is a little bit, probably, as Brian said, more weed pattern, shallow bite, pitching, plastics, crankbaits, jerkbaits. This pattern this time held on, I think, a little bit more like the first tournament. There's, like Brian said, main lake points, a lot of bait still. Brian, I think, multiple times on Facebook Live talked about the fish hugging to the bottom and staying close to the bottom, and I think we saw that throughout mm-hmm. the weekend.
So when we look to the next one at Pathfinder, this being the Governor's Cup, the second one, 2 years, two winners, which it's kind of cool to see the excitement that these guys had.
Well, not only did they walk away with a lot of money, $15,000 for first place, plus they got $2,000 for being top ranger boat. They got family division. They got $250 for being the top in-state team. So they walked away with a bunch of cash. Plus they got some day money. But being the second annual, and even more importantly, is they're going to walk away with two big trophies, and their name is going to go on a perpetual trophy that travels, that'll be here in Glendale, that their name will be on and be on display for everyone that comes to this town to see that what their weight was and what they accomplished.
It is such a cool way that you guys run this tournament, because this one's the special one. It's a little different than all the other ones, but there's 140 boats, and these guys are out to win it.
Well, and we had a great night. Saturday night, we had a band come up from Colorado, and you know, the camaraderie in this event, you know, and you know, first place, second place teams, they, of course, a lot of these guys know each other anyways, but I think they were just as happy for each other for the win, and to be able to hang out last night and just share some good times with a lot of friends was a really neat experience.
Yeah, and so, I think this is what we're hoping to build on. I think this was the idea of the Governor's Cup. As Brian said, you know, we had a band here last night. I think one of the guys was having such a good time, he said, no, don't quit playing. Here's $200. Keep it going.
Oh, wow.
You know, so I think that's what we want. We want this town to celebrate a little bit and take advantage of the events that we're running.
Well, as they're still taking down some of the tables and stuff, but Docks, the trading post here, a great location for, you know, the weekend, this weekend, Bellwood Boats still right down the street did a big thing for last time too. So
I think the whole town came together, you know. I mean, all the bars and the restaurants were all welcoming. I mean, there wasn't anybody here that was, you know, negatively saying, oh boy, there's a bunch of guys in town, a bunch of fishermen. Like, everybody is just very cordial. We had an awful lot of people from town here tonight for the awards, but also last night just to come in and listen to the band. So it was neat.
It's kind of fun, you know. I thought there was going to be a parade breakout, a parade of boats, this guy's going up and down the street, but really, people worked so well together. And again, I mentioned Doc, because Doc had his food truck out here, and that's pretty cool the way that they came together.
Oh, man, they did a fantastic job. I think they had a really good weekend. Doc, you know, it's kind of funny. It's a small town. A lot of people come here over the summer, and the volunteer fire department helped us huge. Doc kind of put it all together. We got a tent put up, bunch of tables and chairs for the fire department. You know, the community just really, really, it was a really nice event.
So the third round is at Pathfinder, so that's a little closer to Casper and a little further from Colorado, so it'll be down with some of the Colorado guys, won't it?
Well, we've got a pretty good following that just follow the circuit, you know. I mean, the Gov Cup is appealing in its own right, but in order to get into the Gov Cup, you know, the to be sure that you're going to get in the Gov Cup is you have to sign up for all three of the circuit events. And so we have close to 92 boats, I think, signed up for the Pathfinder event. And that's really kind of a neat event. It's a reservoir system just like Glendo. It fluctuates maybe a little bit more than Glendo does, but the fishery is fantastic, and you never really know what you're going to catch. I mean, it's full of walleyes, but it's got some fantastic gold medal trout fishery. So we've seen 26, 28-inch brown trout come out during our tournaments. And the facility that we use for that tournament is Sloan's, the inn at Alcova, down in the town of Alcova. And so we'll weigh the fish up on the water, just like we do. It's all catch and release, length to weight conversion. But then everybody will come down, turn in their weight slips at Alcova, and then we'll gather there for a big dinner on Saturday night, big barbecue, and a lot of camaraderie, maybe some cornhole. I don't know. You just never know what's going to happen, but... It's a great facility and a great event, and the reservoir itself, if you've never been on it, it will surprise you. A friend of mine was up there this weekend while we were running this tournament. He said, if this fish is well over 30 inches, it was over 11 pounds.
Wow.
So it's an opportunity to catch a personal best for sure.
Now, Mitch, I know that this is really kind of a special time, because when you go to Pathfinder, then the next one is the championship. So you really want to turn out. And the guys that did sign up for all three, they're going to be putting it all in the line to get in on this.
Yeah, they're trying to get in that top 60. We take the top 60 teams to the championship. Skeeter Boats puts in another $5,000 to seed the pot of that. And it pays out, I think, just as good as a 100 team event, $10,000 for first place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so these guys that got in early and even to try and get in the Governor's Cup, they're going to try to get that one of those 60 places. And last year, I think we went down 85. I think we had 85 teams that fished all three. So, yeah, it's going to be a challenge for a handful of them.
And that event is sponsored by Skeeter Boats. And Skeeter Boats kicks in an additional $5,000 to seat that pot. So that's why we can still have a reduced entry fee at $400, but with only 60 boats, and still pay out like 120 boat field.
So yeah. Cool. And if you've never even really thought about being part of the Stampede, boy, you should really check into it, because maybe you don't want to get in this year. It's something next year to go ahead and look forward to.
Yeah, we encourage everybody. It's a great opportunity to spend some time with your family, a good buddy, a friend, a wife. We had a lot of husband-wife teams fish in this tournament, probably more than normal, it seemed like, but there's probably six or seven for sure. And, you know, we had father-daughters, father-sons, brothers fishing together. It's just a great way to spend a weekend, you know, or a few days, whatever it is, with, you know, someone that you like to spend time with.
Yep, and again, we'll kind of keep you up to date on that. But, guys, it's another successful event. It's always nice to see. And things were changed up a little bit this year. You know, normally you do the weigh-ins right on the dock at the marina. This year you tried something new on the boats, and it really went smoothly.
Yeah, it went great. You know, the anglers so used and accustomed to, you know, doing something for, you know, 20-plus years. And they all did a great job of following rules and, you know, coming up and doing on-water weigh-ins at the end of the day as well. So worked fantastic. And, again, you know, we couldn't thank the sponsors enough for all the support that we received, you know, in town, out of town. We couldn't do it without them.
All right, we will be back in just a few minutes with the winners of the second Gov Cup here at Glendo.
It's Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
Glendo, the Governor's Cup 2025 is in the books. What a great weekend it was. And Brian and Marcus, the champs. Guys, I mean, that was pretty hardcore. You guys did great both days with over 20 pounds both days. I mean, that's pretty harsh.
Yes. Yes, it is.
I know you guys have been part of the tournaments down here and the walleye stampede for quite a while. And how's it feel to get this big win?
Well, it is our first win. And felt great.
It's nice to be able to get out on the water. I mean, obviously, you're fishing. You love to fish. But when you win $15,000, that's a heck of a weekend, right?
Oh, yeah.
It was a fun day. It was a fun weekend.
It was a great weekend.
You could see that you guys were very much like right in on, are we going to win? It's going to be close. Because really, it was within less than a pound or so between you and the second place team. So what was your strategy going in to first day? Because I know a lot of people were having a tough time during the week, but then when Saturday hits, it's game on.
Well, the pre-fishing, we caught a 29 off that spot, and we figured, well, that was the biggest fish that we caught. So we figured we'd go to that spot and fish it, see what turned out, and that's where we stayed for 2 days.
So it's very rare for a team to stay in one place for the entire weekend. And the only time you left, I guess, is probably just to come in at the end of the day?
Literally to come home.
Yep.
How hard was that? I mean, were you like, oh, these fish aren't going to bite, we got to leave?
Oh, at 8:45 this morning, I was a pretty nervous wreck. I ain't going to lie.
It really is a stressful time, especially when you have 2 good days like that. And then you're like, okay, maybe I get that one more big fish. Did you have a game plan when you went in to today?
Yes, after our pre-fishing, that was our spot that we were going to try out first. And that's where we went, and that's where we did very good at right there.
Did you have anybody kind of get close to you, maybe when they saw the net coming out?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. They started crawling.
It's funny. It is fishing, and when people see someone standing there or staying in the same spot, they know something's going on there. And what was the biggest fish you guys caught?
28 and a quarter.
Okay, so it really had a nice run with the big fish.
Yes.
Did you get the big fish? You did get the big fish.
I did,
yeah. Yeah, you did? All right. When they gave you the trophies, then they kept calling your name for money. I mean, good grief, you guys won a lot of day pots and big checks and top in-state finishers.
I think we almost got 20,000 total.
Holy cow. For a weekend of fishing.
Yes.
It's now, pretty good. Hey,
how far in advance were you guys pre-fishing?
We got here Tuesday.
I got here Wednesday.
And we started pre-fishing on Wednesday.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So you had 3 days, and did it change up a lot?
It did, because of the storms and stuff that come through here.
And it really kind of messes with you, doesn't it?
And then once it started getting warmer and warmer and warmer, that's when we knew it was going to be good.
Absolutely. So are you guys heading to Pathfinder for the next round?
Yes, we are.
Oh, man. And you get all the cool stuff that comes along with the Governor's Cup. You get jackets and the big world Super Bowl rings and, well, that big check. I mean, that's a pretty cool thing there, right there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that going on the man cave?
Oh, it's yeah. Going in the man cave.
Absolutely.
Yes, it is.
Absolutely. Well, Brian and Marcus, guys, it's been fun. I know, you know, seeing you guys weigh in, and it gets frustrating sometimes, but to see you on top, that's awesome. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Very good. Brian Muncy and Marcus Griffith, your champions of the 2025 Governor's Cup for the Wyoming Walleye Stampede. Now we have a little time left. We'll talk to my wayboat partner and a buddy that's been helping out for the last few years, Tony Kaiser and Noah Davis, coming up on Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
It's Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
And we are back at Glen Doe, where it is round two of the Wyoming Walleye Stampede, the Governor's Cup, the second annual with this, with Wayboat Captain and Cedar Ridge Outfitters Tony Kaiser. And Tony, we've weighed a lot of fish throughout the weekend here, and it's been pretty interesting at times.
It has, Drew. It's definitely a change in their game from what their first one was to now the Governor's Cup. Their bites definitely changed from what they found in the beginning of the week to now. We're still seeing a few big fish. The numbers are there, but the size isn't there. They're not staying consistent in their 20s to 24s. They're staying consistent in their 16.5 to 18.5. So it's going to be an interesting day at the end of the day to see what happens.
Yeah, when we were out here on the first one, the first day, it was like, what, 36 pounds, I think.
Yeah, 36, and, 34, something like
that. That bite changes day to day. The guys that were in the lead the first day last time got 2 fish the next day. So, yeah. It really is. Anyone and everyone is in at any time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I think 22-something was leading last night. And I mean, it went from 22 right down to 13 pounds. Different times, different days. It's hot. We don't have the overcast. We don't have the wind. The water levels aren't where they normally are. So, yeah, it's definitely a different bite form.
One of the things that we always talk about with this tournament is it's catch and release. So everybody's like, oh, look at all the fish you're taking out of the the lake and everything, but really they go right back in, and the kill level is really low.
Oh yeah, I mean, you're talking, we're putting 99.9% of these fish back. You know, very seldom do you see them where they don't make it. You know, these guys are pretty good. When they get them deep, they come to the boats, they weigh in, they get them back in the water and get them back in their habitat to try and keep them going.
One of the cool parts about the weigh boat is most everyone that is on the weigh boat has fished competitively somewhere down the line, you included. And that really helps with, you know, knowing exactly what to do when you're measuring these fish. Because that's how you do it, is you measure them, you get a length, and then convert that to a weight.
Yep. So, I mean, it's, you know, these guys do it a little bit different than what the Masters or the National Walleye. I mean, that's all walk up on stage, weigh them in, but you know, here it's a true weight. There's no way for anybody to cheat. There's no way for anybody to overcome anybody else. It's fair all the way across the board.
So, and obviously Cedar Ridge Outfitters, we hunt with you in the fall, and you guys have booked quite a few hunts already, so it really is looking like a pretty active year for you.
It is, Drew. It's going to be an exciting year for us. We've added a new addition to the outfitting side. We've purchased another system, which will be coming out here in a week. As far as we're going to make the big announcement of what it is, what's going to happen, but it's going to add a big side to our outfitting side, which is going to make us be very, very busy. We're going to be covering a lot of ground, a lot of territory, a lot more customers. We're offering way more than we ever have. As far as now, we'll be offering the fishing side, the packing side, moose areas, elk areas, black bear areas, you know. So we're going to be covering quite a bit of the state of Wyoming and the Bighorns.
So it's going to be an active year for you guys, and I know that it's filling up the books already, but I mean, people can still reach out and see what it's looking like for the fall.
They can. We've got a few spots left as far as cow elk hunts. Our bull elk hunts are all full already. Mule deer's full, antelope's full. But if you've got tags or you've got any of the questions in any areas where we are, feel free to give us a call, 307-267-7428 or cedarridgehunting.com.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Tony. Now, Noah Davis, another angler that helps us out here with the Wyoming Walleye Stampede, the Governor's Cup. And Noah, over the last couple of years, we've done some pretty big fishing, and you've learned a lot.
Yeah, I've learned a lot from these guys. You know, like, I'll be on a weigh boat, and we'll be measuring somebody's fish, and I'll be like, oh, look what he's got there on his pole. I might have to try that next time, you know.
You know, and that's one of the great parts about this, too, is it's a learning experience, you know, for everyone. Anyone that's out there is learning. And you've met some pretty good dudes out here over the last couple of years.
Yeah, my first one that popped in my head was Mark Schoening. You know, he gave me a call this spring and asked me he said he'd buy me a minnow receipt book if I can catch some minnows for him. So he bought that for me, and, you know, he hooked me up really good. I gave him some minnows, and I made quite a bit of money off that, off just, you know, one of these connections with one of these guys.
So it really is kind of a cool thing, and you're doing the minnows now, and you're really kind of learning that aspect too.
Yeah, I mean, the day that Mark asked me to get him some minnows, Brian was already texting me traps I need to get and places I should try, you know, from Brian. And then I've had people that Mark hangs out with a lot, you know, his fishing group, just talking to me like, oh, we'll lease out this property in Wyoming if you can come trap it for us, because they're obviously out-of-staters.
Mm-hmm. So this summer is going to be a pretty interesting summer for you, because you got all this other stuff you got to do. You got to, you know, you're a kid still, so you got football, you've got family trips, and you're going to get some time for fishing?
Yeah, I'm gonna do it as much as I can. We got a couple more tournaments that I'll squeeze it into, and then Pathfinder's obviously close to home, so we can go out there in the afternoons, and then a little bit of trout fishing in the Bighorns. We got some trips planned, and it'll be fun.
So over the last couple of years, what's the one thing that you've really learned that will stick with you?
Slip bobbers. Slip bobbers is the one technique. You know, we last summer we picked up a 31.5 on a slip bobber, and we never used slip bobbers until I came down to the first tournament. I was like, every single person has these in their boat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very cool stuff.
Yeah, very cool. Yeah.
All right, Noah. Well, good luck. Send us some pictures this summer.
Will do.
Awesome. Thanks a lot, Noah. And that's going to wrap up Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors for this week. The Stampede is heading to Pathfinder next time. If you would like to get in just for the one tournament, you can do that. Go over to WyomingWalleyeStampede.com. Thanks again for listening.
Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors with Drew Kirby. If you have a question, want to make a comment, or have an idea for a show topic, message us on the My Country mobile app. Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.